know, that's really when we have those 30 visits, when we conduct our interviews with the coaches, our scouts, that's when we really put the final stamp on what we feel as a player, as a person. You know, the tape is the tape. Now let's evaluate the person. And so, you know, just in our constant meetings with Marvin, that we had multiple of those, just the maturity, the accountability, the dependability consistently stood out with him. And really, I think one thing that's really unique about Marvin, and it's not surprising based on where he's come from, and his dad and seeing his dad, but just the plan that Marvin has and the plan that Marvin has had since high school, and he carried that into college, and I know he's going to carry it this week when he comes in here for the first time on Thursday. Just the plan on how to get better and the way he takes care of his body, the rehab, the prehab, the plan he has for catching extra balls on a jugs machine.
That's Monty Ossenfort, the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, on a recent episode of the Dave Pasch podcast, talking about Marvin Harrison Jr., the number 4 overall pick in the draft. By the way, it looks like he's been able to secure the number 18. People were wondering.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of consternation about Marvin Harrison Jr.'s jerseys and when they're going to be available.
Not for me.
What number are they going to be on sale? B.J. Ojulari had number 18. It's not official, but there's all these X accounts and Twitter accounts that focus just on uniform numbers, and they seem to have this information.
Yeah, and if you're B.J. Ojulari, I mean, you make that deal, right?
It was a big deal for him to get that number last year. I remember B.J. Ojulari talking about that because he wore that at LSU, so it meant something to him.
Right.
But, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. probably...
Oh, ranks him a little bit. You know, he's the new show pony in camp, you know?
All right, the addition of Marvin Harrison Jr., much needed from an improvement standpoint, one of the weak points position-wise for the Cardinals last year and for the past couple years has been their wide receiver room.
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood Brown moves on in free agency, signs with the Kansas City Chiefs. I think we can all agree that his impact on the Cardinals was overall minimal.
Minimal.
You know, is it a huge loss? I think they could have had a place for Hollywood Brown, but I don't view it as a huge loss.
No, I don't either.
But from bringing in Marvin Harrison Jr., we're talking about draft and free agency combined. Mm-hmm. Since both are pretty much done at this point. Is wide receiver just by default and adding a player of the ilk of Marvin Harrison Jr., is that the most improved spot on the team?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No, I don't think so. I think if Marvin Harrison Jr. turns out to be the superstar we all hope he's going to be, then yes, it will be improved, because it does look like finally somebody's ready to commit to Greg. What a dorge! But when you look at Michael Wilson, is he really a wide receiver too? Is that really him? He's flashed. He's a big target, but I don't know.
I think he can. I'm not comfortable saying yes. I think he can be.
That's the thing. Even with adding a superstar, a potential upcoming superstar with Marvin Harrison Jr., you could argue that the wide receiver room is still the weakest position group.
I mean, when you look at these names, there's not a surplus of talent, which is why the team is still looking to add to the room. Right.
And Zay Jones was in.
Zay
for a
Jones
visit,
was
reportedly.
In. Yeah. Right. In aggregate, I really like the running back room. I think Trey Benson is is going to look like a really smart addition. There's people who are still very high up on Amari DiMercato. We know Michael Carter, at least, it really popped at the end of last season. Then, of course, James Conner. So I like the running back room. I think that is improved.
Top to bottom, that might be the strongest room.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what the other room that I hope has improved the most, Vinny, is when you just look at the defensive line. When you look at Darius Robinson, the rookie, you look at Justin Jones, you look at Bilal Nichols, and then you look at the guys on the edge, Kaiser White and Zaven Collins, who I really hope they move back inside this year. I do not think he's built to kind of play the outside. And you know, Chris Barnes, I think, was good at times last year. This to me is where I'm hoping there's a big B.J. Ojulari, who we've already talked about. Mm-hmm. This is where I hope the Cardinals show the most improvement, is on the defensive line. Because I think it was really, it was duct tape and Band-Aids all last year.
By the end, yeah.
Yes.
And you know, we talked about this in free agency. When they added Jones and Nichols, they went after guys that were available. Guys that were going to be able to play the majority of the snaps. it was just a revolving door of guys. And some of those guys flashed. I mean, Dante Stills, I thought, did some nice things. Roy Lopez did some nice things. But they're part of this rotation now. Hopefully you have more of a concrete rotation that can stay available for you at that position. To me, I look at the cornerback position. And it was a weakness last year. I give those guys credit because that defense overachieved all season long. It was a season-long storyline for you. Underfunded was the word that you used, and it certainly was. But, you know, that was held together with duct tape and chicken wire, and they were still competitive, even with all the injuries they had there. And a guy in Marco Wilson that you were counting on didn't even make it through the season, was let go after his struggles.
Yep.
But what they've done at the cornerback position, at free agency, adding Sean Murphy Bunting, in the draft, adding Max Melton, Elijah Jones, and then you got some guys coming back in Garrett Williams.
Shut up, Garrett!
Keytrell Clark
and Garrett Williams are two guys I've got marked with still a lot of potential.
And I like that group. A lot of it is still needs to be proven, certainly, from a young group like that. Like who's corner is Sean Murphy Bunting your cornerback one right now? I don't know.
Well, I think that's the plan.
But I think they've improved the room.
Yes, I think really their cover corners, if all things go well, will be Sean Murphy Bunting and Max Melton. But that's, again, you're expecting a rookie to walk in and be a starter. And everything I've heard about Max Melton is very, very encouraging. But, again, you know, we do this every year. We just gloss and gush over rookies. And then at the end of November, we're like, man, what happened to this rookie class? Well, they're rookies! Right? We start gauging a player based on the amount of false optimism we assigned to him in the preseason and over the summertime. So I think the overall roster, I think the totality of it looks much better than last year to me.
Yeah, and they made improvements on the offensive line, too. Now, DJ Humphreys got hurt last year. He's no longer with the team. But they went out and got Jonah Williams. They draft Isaiah Adams, who's being penciled in to start at that left guard spot. They get Christian Jones. So they have made improvements at so many different areas.
Yeah.
That that's what that needed to happen in this whole process. So I can't wait for the season to start.
Really?
Yeah. We don't even have a schedule yet.
Yeah, and the signing of linebacker Marcus Bailey yesterday I think is interesting because he's a special teams ace, and I think we're going to get into later. There's a lot of people who might have missed the news or didn't really understand what's going to happen with kickoffs this coming year. It's going to be wild.
Yeah, with the kickoff rules changing in such a big way, there's a lot of signings that after that rule happened and a lot of draft picks that, teams are trying to address that need again. It's become, if you can exploit that, that's a huge advantage.
Covering kickoffs, the way that they're going to demand people line up, it's no one knows who's going to be good on special teams this year.
Yeah.
It's a new frontier for the NFL.
It is. Arizona Sports Half Day Club making its comeback May 15th as the D-backs battle the Reds. It's a week from today. Snag lower level tickets for only $9.87 by texting the word half to 620-620. Act fast. Text half to 620-620 to secure your seats for Arizona Sports Half Day Club. Coming up next, lots of storylines coming out of the NBA playoffs. We'll hit them all next. Bickley and Murata mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports.
Drives to the baseline and rises to dunk it with two hands.
I believe the fourth quarter has belonged to J-Dub. He's been the guy carrying the Thunder here down the stretch.
A couple of highlights from last night's action in the NBA playoffs. Not the most riveting of matchups in Game 1 between Boston and Cleveland, and Game 1 between Oklahoma City and Dallas. Did you hear that stat, though, on that Jaylen Brown 3? The Celtics have led by 20 or more points in 46 of their games this year. That is just nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, I know they've had stretches of dominance. There have been a handful of teams that have. It's the question whether they can seal the deal. You know, the Clippers were once 26-5 and blowing through the Western Conference. There was a time when we thought, whoa, the Clippers are they're kicking backside and taking names this year.
They were certainly a team that had it together at one
the,
point.
I thought Boston is such a great 3-point shooting team. That is why I think that they have that stat. That they are so explosive with the three ball that they can turn games sideways just about as good as anybody.
Well, and that's their MO. Mm-hmm. You know, going in, you're playing the Boston Celtics. Get ready to defend threes at an alarming rate. They're going to get them up. They normally do. And they got a lot of guys that can hit them. And Jason Tatum didn't even have that good of a game yesterday.
Yeah. And you start to wonder, I watch that game and I'm like, whatever happened to the Cavaliers? There was a time when they were a good shooting team. Not anymore.
Frauds.
Yeah, they kind of are. Look, that game they played against the Suns, I think we all were like, they stink.
And we saw two different versions of the Cavs. We saw a watered down version, and then the second time they were a little bit more constructed, if you will, in terms of health, and the Suns dismantled them both times.
And so I really wonder now, when you take a look at the Eastern Conference, if the Knicks get out of this round that they're in, if they can beat the Pacers, are they going to have enough manpower to deal with the Celtics? I think we all love the idea of a classic New York-Boston conference finals, but the Knicks are basically down to running seven guys.
Yeah, it's unfortunate what they've gone through, and they've overcome it. I mean, in the regular season, they overcame the loss of Julius Randle, and OG Anunoby missed a lot of time, came back later in the season. But now, Randle's not able to go. Bogdanovich gets hurt in the last series against Philadelphia. You lose Mitchell Robinson now for the rest of the playoffs. They have a lot of heart, a lot of fight, a lot of spunk, and a lot of fan energy behind them. Mm-hmm.
And literally heart also.
Yeah, and I just don't think, if it comes to that, and I think it is. I mean, I don't think Cleveland's going to really challenge.
No, I don't think so either.
And Indiana, if Tyrese Halliburton gets right, he can change the complexion of that series. Mm-hmm. But again, I think there's something about New York. But if it comes down to New York and Boston, I just don't see the Knicks having enough.
Yeah, and I love their fight. I like them better than Boston. I would want them to beat Boston. I just don't think that they're going to. This injury now to Mitchell Robinson, it makes him very, very thin. On top of the Julius Randle, on top of the Bogdanovich thing as well. And then you look in the West last night, and there's something clearly off with Luka. Clearly. And
I think he's been hurt the last.
Well, no. Besides being a hoe.
No, but I think he's
besides
been playing.
Besides being hoe, you fat. Yeah, he's got a knee injury. I heard Brian Windhorst this morning.
The last couple games of the last round, and then this one, he's been kind of playing through injury.
He's like 9 of 43 in his last 50-plus three-point attempts.
Yeah, I think it's the worst historic stretch of threes over a sample size in NBA history. I was expecting a little bit more from Dallas. Maybe we'll get it as a series goes on, but Luka says, yeah, we just got to get better.
When you look at your shooting night, what went into that?
Who cares? We lost, man. We just got to move on to the next one. I got to be better. We got to be better, and just, we know for game one struggling, but we got to focus. They're a great team, great defensive team, great offensive team, so it's not going to be easy at all. We got to play very good basketball and focus basketball for 48 minutes.
Yeah, and I think Luka in that series, Donovan Mitchell in the Cleveland series against Boston. Both of those guys are, they kind of make their teams go, and they're dealing with injury right now. Give them credit for trying to fight through it. Like I said, I expected more from Dallas. I didn't know what to expect. Oklahoma City, after sweeping, taking that next step, getting to the semifinals against a team that has a lot more playoff experience individually and collectively than they do. They didn't even blink last night.
Yeah, I know. I agree.
Such a good basketball
team. It really is. I'm not sure they'd be much of a ratings monster for the NBA because there's a lot of anonymity to who they are and what they do. But collectively, they're fantastic. And then the big story, the Jamal Murray story yesterday. This is quite interesting what the league chose to do. And as a fan of a basketball team that I loved that got hosed by a commissioner who threw the book at the Suns, Amari Stoudemire and Boris Diaw in that San Antonio series. Why couldn't Adam Silver have been the commissioner back then?
Because listen to the palaver.
Because clearly Adam Silver is of the mindset that I don't want to affect the competitive balance of the series based on this. Jamal Murray twice threw objects on the court at an official.
To listen to the palaver.
And to escape. In game one, he missed both.
First of all, it shows you how soft the dude is. And second of all, you can make a real strong case that everything warrants of what he did warrants a one game suspension. But this is not what Adam Silver likes to do, and this is not the first time he's done this.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what David Stern wouldn't do.
Well, David Stern leaned on the letter of the law. There was no flexibility there. Mm-hmm. Adam Silver has shown a little bit of flexibility. And to answer your question, too, another difficulty in why couldn't Adam Silver be the commissioner then? He was still in the larval stage at that
point. Oh, man. I just made a note to myself. Almost that exact joke for Friday.
People have short memories, Jarrett. Have at it.
That's right.
I'm sure you'll phrase it better than I did.
That's pretty good, though. He was in the pupa.
I think they blew it, but I think Adam Silver's looking at it, defending champions, down 0-2. You don't have Jamal Murray for game three. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is there precedence there? Is there a precedent for a player being that disruptive on the bench during a game out of frustration? Jamal Murray deserves all the criticism he's getting. I mean, he just absolutely cracked in every way under pressure
yes,
in that
did.
Game.
Yes, he did.
But I think you got to come down hard if you're the commissioner, and you got to suspend players for those type of actions. That was unacceptable.
Yes, I think that as much as I like the idea of let the players settle this stuff and hit the player in another way, and $100,000 fine is not insignificant. But to me, when you're throwing a heating pad at the referee, come on.
Maybe he looked cold. And he was trying to help him.
Maybe his lower back was tightening up, Jarrett.
Yeah, Denver tomorrow, or that not until Friday, right?
Yeah,
until
Friday night. Yep.
Monday to Friday. I will agree with Jarrett and his complaints about the scheduling on that front. Come on, you don't need that much time in between games in one series.
Well, the problem is they had the first two games of that series before the other series in the West even started.
Yes, they were front-loaded.
So you knew they were going to have to play catch-up at some point. Yeah.
Coming up next, Sarah Cazell will take us through the big stories on this Wednesday morning. The reboot.
Hey.
Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bentley and Barada Mornings. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot, everybody. I'm Bickley and Barada Mornings. I don't know if you've heard this, but this is the greatest show. So you're very lucky to be with us here today. Or was it two claps? I don't remember. It's been too long. We are very happy to have you with us as we take you through the top stories of the day, like we do every single day at this time. I am Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley.
Hey!
With Vince Murata.
Oh, Jones!
And Jarrett Carlin. Old farts? Talking about Gambo.
Don't be so hard on yourself, Jarrett.
No, why? We were talking about point guard options yesterday. I was like, why would I have said that? That's why.
Old farts?
Yeah, sorry. The D-backs, let's start with them. They got a nice win last night to open up their series in Cincinnati. They beat the Reds 6-2. Corbin Carroll, hello, welcome. He came alive with 5 RBI on the night. He got the D-backs on the board in the third, scored again in the fifth, and then broke the game open in the seventh with this 3-run shot.
Here comes swing and a high fly ball deep left center field. That's going towards the gap. That's going over the wall and gone. 3-run home run for Carroll as he continues to dominate Cincinnati. Second homer of the season, and it's 5-0 Diamondbacks.
Chris Garagiola on the call for Arizona Sports there. Zach Gallen was already out of the game at that point. He went 6 innings, no runs allowed, just 1 hit, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts in his first start since April 26th. He skipped his last start because of hamstring soreness. He was shifted around a bit. And then Paul Sewald made his first appearance of the year. The second batter he faced turned into a solo shot, but he retired the next two in the ninth to end the game. Here is Torrey Lovello after the win, very pleased, talking about Corbin Carroll's big day at the plate.
I probably thought something spectacular was about to happen. Five RBIs wasn't on my bingo card, but I know that he was the right guy in the right spot. And you know, he executed to get that first one, a big base hit. Just a lot of little things went right, but the home run was a really impressive swing. So he's a good player, and you, in my opinion, things were going to start to develop for him, and I know he's going to continue to work hard to have more days like this.
All right, guys, start, sit, cut style. Who had the most encouraging or comforting performance from last night? Corbin Carroll, Paul Sewald, Zach Gallen.
Oh, start Corbin Carroll, sit Zach Gallen, cut Paul Sewald.
Hard to say. It's the order I have, too. Sitting Zach Gallen's performance is hard. But, I mean, Corbin Carroll is the key to this whole offense.
Yeah.
So to see him get unlocked and now he's driven in 7 runs in his last 2 games. That's more than he had in the previous 32 games combined.
34.
Is it 34?
Yeah. As Jody Jackson tweeted last night, shout out Jody, games 1 through 34, he had 5 RBI. Games 35 and 36.
I'm looking at his game.
7 RBI.
He didn't play in 2 of those games. That's why.
Fair enough. Okay.
So, but same idea.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Jody Jackson.
Yes.
So you don't expect it every night, but it seems like he's finally getting comfortable again, and he's figured out what was plaguing him. So you have to start that. And Paul Sewald, as I brought up during D-backs Daily, to get him back in a low leverage situation,
yeah,
and let him get comfortable again. I mean, he's a guy who hasn't dealt with injury very much, mm-hmm, in his career, so right. I think that worked out perfectly for him too.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. That's the best way to kind of integrate a guy like that back, yeah, in. Hey, here you go. You got a 5-run lead, give up a home run. No big deal.
Yeah.
But you got keep some, it at
the... You got some cushion.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, all right. We'll see if they can keep that rolling today. They play game 2 of 3 in Cincinnati starting at 3:40 on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app. Jordan Montgomery will go for the D-backs. And make sure you are listening at 8:30. We're going to have D-backs pitcher Ryne Nelson on the show. 8:30. So all be right with us. Let's get to the Suns now. Our Kevin Zimmerman is getting Suns fans ready for the draft. He's going position by position right now on the website and writing about the best and most likely available players that the Suns can look into with their number 22 pick in this year's draft. We have very clearly established the Suns' need for a real point guard. James Jones here on the topic at his year-end press conference.
That's a narrative we'll hear a lot. Point guard, point guard, point guard, point guard, point guard, point guard. And I'm saying, sure, that's great. Who do you want? Like, who do you want? Like, who's available given the way we're built? Who can fit with this group? Whose game seamlessly fits with this group? And when you put that player on the floor and you take the ball out of someone's hands, whose hands are you taking it out of? And who are you putting in that position?
So many questions to answer, courtesy, yeah, of James Jones.
Right.
Okay, in this post by Kevin Zimmerman, he lists 4 college point guards that fall within the range of the Suns' number 22 pick and, mm-hmm, a few more reaches on top of that. Would you guys be comfortable with the Suns pursuing a rookie point guard with that pick?
I would be. Yeah, I would be.
Would you rather they use a pick on drafting somebody or including it in a trade package for an established point guard?
Well, I think that their priority is not point guard. I think that they've made that very, very clear. And there are other needs. Getting an athletic wing, mm-hmm, that can play some defense, I think, is very, very important as well. But yeah, what worries me though about drafting the right guy is I don't know how much work and how much this team even believes in the drafting process. They continue to kind of denigrate it. You heard that during the press conference, kind of like, well, what do we care about 2031?
Right.
Yeah, that's true. I don't necessarily think it has to be a point guard if they make a pick at 22. I think it's imperative that they make a pick at 22, though.
Use that pick, okay.
They have not had a player on their roster in the last 2 seasons that has been designated a rookie. The last draft pick that they made that actually played for them was Jalen Smith.
Who barely played for them.
They had 4 rookies play in the 21-22 season, and a lot of that was out of necessity because remember when they got hit by the COVID thing and they had to completely sign a bunch of guys off the street? They need to find somebody. And I know people point at, you know, missteps and why did they have to include Tumani Kamara in that trade to Portland? Mm-hmm. He played 70 games, started 49 for the Blazers, and has established himself as a top flight defender already. Yeah. But you have to ask yourself the question, if he was not thrown in that deal, would he have gotten the sweats off this year for the Suns? Because of they don't have much belief in young players mm-hmm. right now at all.
Yeah. All right, we are going to wrap this thing up with a quick MVP question before we go to break, because we've got a guest coming up next who's going to be tremendous for us, Sam Amick. Nikola Jokic, Luka Doncic, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander are the three NBA MVP finalists. They'll announce that around 4:30 today, who is the MVP for this year. Who is your MVP this year?
Well, listen, out of those three, I would vote Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think what they've done collectively has been incredible. I think Luka has got Kyrie. I think Vinny's probably right. I think Jokic is probably going to win it, but I'd give it to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I would go with Jokic. I think he would be my pick. You know, with the target on their back, he was so consistent again all year long. I would go SGA 2, Doncic 3.
Okay.
Actually, I mean, I think Jalen Brunson probably got snubbed by not being a finalist, and you could make an argument for him over Doncic.
You could make an argument for Anthony Edwards, too.
After Towns got injured,
he carried the team.
All right, well, that'll be announced around 4:30 before the one playoff game tonight.
Yep. I wonder what inspiring speech Nikola Jokic will make this year.
I don't want to be here.
I have to go home.
Get these minions out of here.
Where are the carrots?
They think I'm their boss.
Thank you, Sarah. Rush Hour Reboot every morning at 7:30. Coming up next, we'll continue to talk NBA playoffs and Phoenix Suns. Senior NBA writer from The Athletic, Sam Amick, joins us next here on Bickley and Murata Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
That's supposed to be a joke, and you didn't laugh.
Hey, it's Gambo. Just when we thought something good would happen for Arizona sports, Alec Thomas suffered a setback. How does this impact the D-backs going forward? We'll discuss starting at 2 on Arizona Sports.
A Wednesday edition of Bickley and Murata Mornings rolls on here live from the Auction Community Studios. Still thick of the NBA playoffs without the Phoenix Suns. Here to talk about all of it with us, senior NBA writer from The Athletic, Sam Amick, our
Sam.
Guest on the Arizona Sports Line. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you.
Always good to have you on the show. 10 days. The Phoenix Suns have been out of the playoffs. For 10 days, we've been hearing, there's an announcement coming soon on the future of Frank Vogel. Yet here we are still waiting. What do you make of all of this, this situation right now with the Suns and Frank Vogel's future with this franchise?
I mean, you know, I will spin it somewhat positive and say the idea that Matt, you know, Ishbia is taking his time figuring out the blame game and not, you know, reacting in the way that he did and James Jones did in that press conference right after the year where, just as you guys know, a lot of bizarre statements made and strange framing of the way their season came to an end. You know, if you're in his shoes, it's tough because, you know, one thing we don't talk about a lot with coaches is it's not really ever just about, you know, hey, was it his fault? Was it not his fault? Like, you need to find out where he is at with the guys in the locker room. And you need to find out, you know, how effective he'll be able to be going forward based on how, you know, this season went. Now, because of the price that Ishbia paid for the team, you know, typically when you give a coach a 5-year deal, like this is not analysis that happens 1 year in, but you know, he's obviously pushing pretty hard and I'm curious to see what he does here.
James Jones also said something very weird during that end of the season press availability when he said, we're going to be the team that maximizes Kevin Durant. How do you think KD, as a guy that's covered these guys for a while, how do you think he internalized that statement? And do you think, knowing what was in that Athletic story about guys rolling their eyes at Frank Vogel in the locker room, do you think maybe he's thinking or has wanderlust again?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how Kevin's thinking, and I've learned the hard way. Kevin doesn't appreciate it when we speculate too much about the way he looks at it. But I if I had to guess, you know, and I will, he I don't think he probably loves, you know, being in the spotlight in that kind of way. I think at this stage of his career, it's a team game, and he's looking at the collective. But I do understand, you know, when James said what he said, and Dan, you kind of just alluded to this, the way I interpreted it was that's, you know, their way of making sure that he knows that he is the priority here, you know, potentially for fear that he would get kind of waterlust and look around again. You know, no signs as of yet that that's the case. But, you know, the downside of handling the optics and the messaging that way is that, at least from the outside looking in, you just look like a somewhat delusional group in terms of mm-hmm. what, you know, what you think you have. I understand they have a lot of talent, but Kevin Durant has been maximized. You know, he was maximized in OKC. I mean, no situation's perfect. You know, did Russell Westbrook take away from his superpowers at times? Sure. They also elevated them at times, you know, similar with the Warriors. So, you know, the idea that Kevin is still searching for a place to get maximized at this stage is not something that most folks, I think, agree with.
Sam Amick, senior NBA writer for The Athletic, our guest here on the Arizona Sports Line. You mentioned Kevin Durant, and, you know, the Suns maybe letting him know that he's a priority. Devin Booker is a priority as well. And I think it was an interesting, sometimes perplexing season for Devin Booker. Now that it's over, and him being asked to do different things at a higher level than he did earlier in his career. What do you make of the season and where Devin Booker is right now at this point in his career, Sam?
It's tough. You know, these are first world problems, obviously, but like a guy like Devin, who, you know, he was loyal to the franchise for, you know, the early stage of his career, and it was such a cool story when they were able to get to the finals a couple of years ago. And they're not alone. I mean, there's been a few teams the past couple of years that they kind of, you know, sniffed the idea of a title and looked capable of doing it and just fell short, you know. But it's been a tough fall from grace since then, if you're Devin, where it's like, man, I was so patient and, you know, I was about the right things. And not only that, I mean, when they got to the finals, it was, you know, like he was the gravitational pull when it comes to talent that had come their way. You know, Chris Paul wanting to come to Phoenix, that was a Monty Williams, Devin Booker thing. And then, you know, chapter two being Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal. So for it to not work out and for it to be as, you know, kind of seemingly dysfunctional as it is, at least, you know, to some degree, I got to imagine that disappoints him. And, you know, and I don't know where his head's at.
Yeah.
You know, this is the NBA, so there's rumors about everything, right? So mm-hmm. he's tied to the Knicks. But he is age-wise at a place where, you know, I guarantee you, at minimum, he's got some people in his ear saying, hey, Books, you know, why don't we think about something else?
Yeah.
You know, and he's gonna do what he wants to do. But yeah, I think he's got a lot to think about.
Yeah, I was told very directly, watch out for World Wide West. And you know exactly what that means, Sam. All right. When you look at this basketball team and you see that they don't have a point guard, they don't have a lot of wing defenders, they don't have a lot of athleticism, they don't have a lot of size, they're in the second apron. How do they get out of this, especially in a Western Conference where you're looking at a couple of teams in the Thunder and now the Timberwolves that are going to be issues going forward, along with all the other usual suspects?
And if I have the answer, then they can, you know, they can give me $10 million to go run the front office. It's, you know, it is they're incredibly restricted, and they are unfortunately now the poster, you know, boys, so to speak, of the second apron experience, and that's why, you know, when you analyze the different things that could come out of this, that's why most people gravitate toward star player movement right away. Like somebody's got to go. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if that's going to happen. They obviously are preaching continuity and to try it again. But you know, it's not just the price tag, you know, when it comes to the second apron. That's something where a guy like Matt Ishbia, who's got a ton of money, can flex and say, no, I got this. We're good. The problem is, you know, you can't make trades. You can't, you know, you might ultimately lose your draft picks. You know, the trade one in particular, I think people don't understand. I mean, if you're in the second apron, you have to match salaries to the penny, which virtually, you know, makes it impossible to do deals, as opposed to the typical matching of within 120% of salary.
Yeah.
You know, they made it a hard cap, basically, if you're above the second apron, and that's just not a place where any team is going to want to operate.
Sam Amick, our guest, before we let you go, obviously fans in Phoenix were discouraged that the Suns got swept by the Timberwolves. The T-Wolves are still sweeping. What they've done so far in this postseason is eye-opening and very impressive. Do you see anybody beating them in the West? Because Oklahoma City's been real good, too, but Minnesota has just been a machine.
Yeah, I mean, I do think we keep overlooking OKC a little bit. I haven't seen them up close lately, but technically speaking, they have been just as dominant as Minnesota. But I did cover the first two games of the Denver-Minnesota series, and my God, Minnesota just ate them alive. And, you know, it's funny, Minnesota is one of those teams, and a lot of these teams left qualify here, that are benefiting from the new whistle. You know, I know playoff basketball is tough, but this is, you know, even more intensity, more letting go of physical play than we are used to seeing. And the other night, it was just wild. I mean, it was like, you know, NBA, MMA. And and watching Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander Walker, you know, just go after Jamal Murray, watching Karl Anthony Towns, you know, run over Jamal in the paint and not get a whistle. Like, if they're going to have, you know, let Minnesota play that way, then Denver's got no shot. Because physicality-wise, intensity-wise, and just size on the roster, they can't match up with these Nuggets. So they look good. You combine the star power of Anthony Edwards, and they're formidable. But, man, after last night on the other series, real quick, you know, if Luka is ailing in the same way that Jamal Murray is in the other series.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then, you know, I think an OKC Minnesota matchup would be pretty competitive.
Yeah, it would. Sam, always appreciate the
time
and the insight. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Sam Amick, senior NBA writer from The Athletic, our guest on the Arizona Sports Line. Bix, got your blast to kick off the 8 o'clock hour straight ahead here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.